You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
This next hour is going to be nuts.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You're going to have to buckle up and then just put your head between your knees and put your hands over your head like you're in a plane crash. Which, by the way, isn't going to help if, in fact, you ever are in a plane crash.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, 4 to 6 p.m. every day, every weekday, 99.3 FM, 1510 a.m. I had a tweet go out. I didn't tweet it. Arrowhead Addict put out a tweet earlier today, tweeting out the podcast from yesterday. Tweeting about, the tweet just says, QB rankings were the topics of discussion for this show recently. Alex Smith fared worse than expected. And then it was a link to the post that has the podcast in it. And then someone named Linda Dua responded to that tweet with, "Who cares?" And it just kind of, that just kind of left me wanting. There wasn't even a question mark. It was just two words, no punctuation, "Who cares?" What was she even talking about? Saying who cares that we thought Alex Smith was not that great? Who cares that there's a podcast that exists? The show that was been podcasted? Seems like you care, Linda. Nick Jacobs joins us now. He's on Twitter at Jacobs71. The Chiefs and the Seahawks play tonight in Seattle. Nick, Two questions. First of all, who cares?
I care, Josh.
Thank you so much. I've needed that validation so badly. And second question, what's the first thing you're looking for tonight?
I say the first thing I'm looking for tonight is if the offense can maintain what it's done in the past two games on its opening couple of drives and being effective at moving the football. So I remember there's been some times where that hasn't been the case over the years. So if they can do that, then, I mean, that's at least off to a promising start.
So let me go ahead and ask you a couple of questions that I've been asking everyone that I've talked to over the last week or so about Alex Smith that will then eventually, I will evilly weave into a larger point about Patrick Mahomes.
Your man, Patrick Mahomes.
I didn't mean to make this like my little piece of Chiefs Kingdom where I am just constantly professing my love in forms of stories and poems and songs about Patrick Mahomes, the legend. But that's apparently what's happened, so I'm just going to lean into it a little bit. But at first, the question that sort of leads into it all is that I'm curious for your perspective on is what do you expect from Alex Smith this season, both just sort of in a vacuum and then also compared to the context of his entire career?
Well, I'd say for Alex, for the most part, this offense he's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
He knows every part of it. He knows every read. He knows every protection. He knows what they're supposed to do when they see different looks from the defense, where to go with the football. He's got all that down. And, I mean, the reason that's so big for him is because the only time he had that in San Francisco was with Harbaugh. Harbaugh was the only time he ever really had stability because they rotated offensive coordinators like a game of musical chairs. So Alex never had the same system 2 years in a row until really when Harbaugh got there and he finally had that foundation. So for him, I mean, now he's headed into year five, and that's the longest he's ever had the same system since he was at Utah. So for him, I mean, last year you were kind of hoping he would have some of the performances that Trent Green had under Dick Vermeil, to where when he hit that year three, year four mark that he had perfect command of everything. I think Alex has, in Patrick Mahomes, he has a guy who's going to help push him in some regards to help up the ante on those competitive juices, so that he may be willing to take some shots down the field more so, like the one to Kelce last week in the game,
right,
where he perfectly put that ball over the linebacker and the safety had gone over to take Tyreek and he made sure he looked that safety off before he dropped that in there. So I think those are some of the things we're going to see from Alex. Now, Alex, as we've talked about before, the line's going to have to give him good protection. The receivers are going to have to do their job route-wise and the run game's going to have to improve a little bit. But, I mean, you're hoping to see the best you can out of Alex because, in some ways, this is kind of a contract year.
What is the best you can see from Alex Smith?
For me, I think the best I've seen him play was in the Indianapolis Colts game in 2013. The way he looked out there was the closest I've seen anybody in the organization look to Rich Gannon in terms of mobility, accuracy, the way they had command of that offense. And Alex did pretty much most of it without a run game when Jamal got hurt.
Right.
Because then it was down to Cyrus Gray and Nile Davis.
Right.
And they did an okay job. But that was the best I've seen Alex take a team on his back, have that chip on his shoulder, trying to prove his worth. And I think he's having to do what he did in 2013. I think he's having to do it again now. And I think I hope we see what we saw in that Colts playoff game again.
And see, I like that way of looking at it, because I agree with you. The best I've ever seen Alex Smith be was in that Colts playoff game. But over a 16 or hopefully, 17, 18, 19 game sample size, I haven't seen anything like that from Alex Smith for more than the blink of an eye. Last year, he had his career high in passing yards. He threw for 3,500 yards. But I just pulled up Pro Football Reference to make sure I had a couple of things right, and I noticed this for the very first time just a second ago. Last year, he had the lowest touchdown percentage that he's ever had in a season where he started more than seven games.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 3.1% touchdown percentage last year. And again, this is a lot of years, but all the way back to 2009, whenever he started 10 games, that was the last time that he had a touchdown percentage. Actually, sorry, 2007 was the last time he had one lower than that. He didn't play in 2008. I have a hard time believing in Alex Smith going to sort of a next level by being pushed by Alex Smith for one reason. I get the logical argument of, there's more competition. Competition makes you better. But at the same time, whatever ways that Alex Smith can be pushed in, I don't see that getting to him in game. I don't see him on third and nine at midfield, seeing Tyreek Hill streaking down the sidelines in a difficult but one-on-one matchup, as opposed to seeing Albert Wilson crossing across the middle about 5 yards downfield. I don't think that in that moment he's going to go, "Oh yeah, Patrick Mahomes is behind me," and then fling it deep. I think that's too much to expect from him this year by way of the things that he most needs to change. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. And the only counter I would have in regards towards that is with Alex in that case, to get the most out of him at his level and his ceiling that a lot of us have all kind of debated over the years, is that you got to give him manageable down and distance so he feels comfortable in those regards and he doesn't go back to some of those old patterns to where in third and nine, I got to take the safe play, and maybe it's a third and five and he feels more comfortable in some of those regards, and that adjust some of those blitzes that teams are going to throw or certain pressures or how maybe they play some of their coverages. And also the run game to me has always been something that this offense has never had for a 16 game span, because it revolves around misdirection. We're going to bring this ghost motion. We're going to do this jet sweep. We're going to do this reverse. We're going to shift this guy, so this backer and this safety shift a little bit here. We're going to do this and that, or we're going to throw these screens and all these things just to try to get a handful of yards in the run game effectively with the offensive line. So I'm a firm believer that Alex is obviously, as we've all kind of agree upon, they all kind of need he needs some help. He's not a guy who, as you've stated, for 16 games is going to carry the team on his shoulder like Rodgers has had to do, or Brady or Manning over the years. But he's a guy that I think you can find that in between if you give him proper balance and the things he's comfortable with, because Alex is really good out of play-action passes, but if your run game's not working, then your play-action passes are really kind of thrown out of sync.
I'm with you on all of that, but whenever you're talking about how he's a guy that needs manageable down and distance, the way that you said that was synced up with me watching Blake Bortles on my TV in front of me right now. They're re-airing the Panthers-Jags game on NFL Network, God knows why. But Blake Bortles was on my screen when you said that, and I wanted to barf. Because talking about having a quarterback that you need to give a manageable down and distance to because he's unwilling to throw the ball 10 yards on third and nine, he'd rather throw it five and then pray to God that Albert Wilson picks up the rest of those, that is not a way that I want to live my life anymore, Nick. I'm tired of having a quarterback that requires a manageable down and distance. That's something you say whenever you have a quarterback that you are actively trying to run out of town, not a guy that is somehow getting, every vote of confidence from the head coach. That's just, ugh. Ugh. That's the end of my question. Is ugh.
Are you gonna be okay, Josh?
No,
you
I'm not.
Trash can
I'm gonna,
nearby.
I'm gonna,
have a trash can nearby.
I'm gonna go get it. Hold on. Go ahead. You go ahead and answer. I'm gonna go get this barf bag.
No, you're fine. And I'm not saying that Alex necessarily has to have a manageable down and distance. I'm just saying from a play calling perspective.
Sure.
When you give those manageable down and distance, based on the skill sets that you have around you, that just it makes it a lot easier playbook wise to manipulate what the defense is going to do, what you can force the defense to have to do against you.
Right, but the problem there, yeah, is whenever you're dealing with having a manageable down and distance, that being something in the back of your head saying, oh man, I'm much more confident in this situation with this quarterback, it severely limits what you are allowed to do the first two downs. If you're saying, you know what, I cannot end up leaving Alex Smith with a 3rd and 10, then you have to run the ball one time, and you have to throw a short pass one of those times, because if you take a couple of deep shots, and you take the gambles that you need to win consistently in the NFL, you take those deep shots, if both of them fall short, then all of a sudden on third down, you might as well just punt it. I hate living that way. I hate living that way.
Well, I mean, hopefully they found the recipe to figure it out this year. That's all I can do to try to put a positive on it.
Yeah, that's all I got also. And that hope isn't doing much for me. One other thing in the quarterback position before we bounce somewhere else is with Patrick Mahomes, I'm curious, again, that's sort of a setup question, I suppose, is how much do you think Patrick Mahomes would benefit from sitting behind Alex Smith for an entire season?
I personally don't think it hurts him in any way.
Sure.
Because I think there's so many nuances he's going to have to learn, and I would much rather him get his footwork correct, get his passing mechanics correct, and get his reads correct on being on the scout team when it doesn't count and when it doesn't cost you jobs, health insurance, or a season.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather him have that opportunity than to throw him out there against the Super Bowl champion and say, hey, good luck to you. We'll manage you how we can, but, you know, good luck to you. Because, I mean, on the pass that he threw to Anthony Sherman last week, if you looked at his footwork, I mean, the way he had his weight shifted and how he threw it, that you knew there was going to be too much loft on it. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you that zip that he's capable of. And it's just those things that it's going to take him time to get comfortable in the NFL and in the pocket and with the reads to where you could see him at his capability, which, I mean, is very bright. It's just a matter of him getting that time. And I think if he gets that time, I think your frustrations will go away down the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they drafted him this year, and you're going to have to work with those things to get him to where everybody wants to go.
And I agree with you that he does need to have the experience and get used to being in an NFL pocket. The problem is he is not going to be getting used to being in an NFL pocket in practice on a day-to-day basis. So the thing that I keep trying to find quantifiable answers to, and you can't really quantify this, so I understand the weakness of this already, but I'm trying to quantify how much will he benefit from sitting behind Alex Smith this year compared to how much would he benefit from playing this year? Because I think that simply Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are not going to get to the Super Bowl in his first year as a Chiefs quarterback. I think that's an insane thing to expect. But when that second year opens up, especially, and then in year three, all of a sudden you start having all of these hopes, all of these different types of optimism that just seep into the water. The problem for me is this year, I think this is the misconception at least. I think the misconception is that this year sitting behind Alex Smith will essentially replace his rookie year as a starter, and that's simply not going to be the case. He's going to be going through all sorts of growing pains in his first year as a starter, regardless of if he sits behind Alex Smith or not.
Correct. You're right on that aspect. It's just a matter of, as a coaching staff, the things that I think they have to decide is how much of this playbook is he able to master right now? How much of this playbook can he execute that we can go out and win football games and be unpredictable in our play calling to where defenses can't pick up the tendencies after 2 to 3 weeks and take away those things, and then we mentally hurt him in his process, which a lot of quarterbacks that have been rookies have faced over the years, and that's why some of them rise above it, some of them don't. But, I mean, the Chiefs in some ways, I know it's not ideal, but they have the luxury right now to where they can bring him along as they see fit until they feel that he can execute enough of the playbook for them to be where they want to go.
last thing on Mahomes, and I want to move to a different area, is that Andy Reid's already admitted at least a little bit that he's comfortable letting Patrick Mahomes work with the playbook because he's the backup now. Alex Smith is going to miss a game this year. That's almost certainly going to happen. And Reid has said, essentially, we'll make it work for however long Smith is out because this is our best backup option at the very least. But I digress. Any dope can talk about quarterbacks for a while. That's why I've had such a good week or so. But one thing that that you spend an especially admirable amount of time on, I'll say, is the offensive line play and the defensive line play. You were tweeting about it during training camp and everything. I'm like, man, he's watching. Does he not see that Patrick Mahomes is over there? How could he even avert his eyes for a mere moment? But I am curious what you think about the current state of this offensive line. It's consistency into this year, hopefully. Do you think Parker Anger eventually unsits Brian Witzman? If so, when? And then what on the offensive line, let's stick to the offensive side first, what on the offensive line worries you, and what are you most optimistic about?
Yeah, I'd say with the offensive line, what I'm optimistic about is I think Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz both look great. Eric Fisher and Schwartz look really good. They do a good job off the edge. They don't have issues. Fisher had his issues rookie in his sophomore year, and he was able to get those fixed to where he's starting to become the veteran that I think they envisioned when they drafted him. Mm-hmm. And athletically, he's fantastic. I mean, he fits everything that they want. And Mitchell Schwartz does a good job in both run and pass, and you don't have to worry about him. And it's when you get into those guard spots, I know a lot of people love Duvernay-Tardif, mm-hmm. and he's a very athletic player. And he's got a mean, nasty streak to him, and those are positives about him. But he still has flaws in his run game on some of his reach blocks that, as you saw last week in the short yardage third and one, him and Brian Weitzman, as you pointed, both got pushed back because they both had tough reaches, and he couldn't get under enough to be able to push that defender back. And that pushed him into the lap of, I think it was Kareem Hunt at the time. And Kareem was stuck in between guard and guard, and he only had that little hole to go because he didn't have room to bounce it outside now. So in the short yardage situations, they have a struggle there, and they have some struggle in their run game if they're trying to do power runs. Mitchell Schwartz, to me, he's an athletic guy who can pull, and that's what they like at center, mm-hmm. and he can do the screens, he can do the counters, he can do the stretches, whatever they want to do. It's just the stoutness there. To me, Zach Fulton is a great, powerful center, but he's not going to give you much athletically on poles.
Right.
But I think Mitchell Schwartz, I think he could be, Mitch Morse.
Morse, yeah.
I think Mitch Morse could be a great guard. I think skill set-wise, like, he could be a guard if they ever want to transition to that. And I think Duvernay, there's just some things that he needs to fix. If he gets those fixed, then he can be the player that they paid for. But at the same time, you said Parker Anger, to me, him and Mitchell Schwartz are their two best offensive linemen in technique. Hmm. And whenever they had Parker Anger in there, but him and Fisher and Morse and the combo blocks that they could do and the power run game they could do with those three guys together, because Morse has help if he needs it, or Fisher has help if he needs it to do some of those combo blocks, it opened up that left side a lot for them to do a lot more power run game. And Parker Anger, you don't see many guys coming out of college that had the technique in both footwork and hand placement that he did. And that's why I'm excited that he can come back when he does. And, I mean, I think a question that you pointed to in terms of when he will be back, I think as soon as that knee's healthy, he's in there at their left guard spot and they're rolling with it.
Let's go over to the defensive side of the ball then. I have been extremely optimistic about this defensive line since all these pieces have come together. I think Benny Logan's going to be a great fit in this defense, even going back to like Roy Miller, a guy who's in the rotation now in the backup spot. But Raheem Nunez-Rochez has apparently put on more good weight. Chris Jones is going into year two. Alan Bailey looks like a monster. Tano Passanio is 290 pounds and is getting reps at nose, at end, and as an outside linebacker. Are you as optimistic about that defensive line as I am?
Yes, yes, and you have great reason to be, because here's the sly thing that they did, and people didn't even notice, is they rebuilt that defensive line in essentially two off seasons.
Yeah,
when they drafted Nunez-Rochez to maybe replace somebody down the road, whether it was Howard or Poe, mm-hmm. and then they drafted Chris Jones to potentially replace the impact of Poe. Then they brought in Benny Logan to replace, and then, as you said, they got Passanio now. And they've built the next wave of their defensive line before Howard became too expensive and had too many injuries. Mm-hmm. And whenever Poe – because, see, here's the thing with Poe. his back hasn't been the same since that surgery. It's, even before the surgery happened in 2014, you could kind of see it.
Right.
And then in 15, you could really see it to where his back just, at the size he was, wasn't going to hold up anymore. Hmm. And in a 3-4 system, your nose tackle is going to have, he's got to be able to stay healthy. And he's got to be able to hold that point of attack and be able to effectively do it for as long as possible. So the Chiefs have done a good job getting Logan and Miller both in there for a rotation purpose to where there's not much drop-off in that run defense. So, yeah, from a D-line perspective, you're 100% right. This is the best rotation they've had on this defensive line, and the more you can keep them fresh and keep the drop-off to a minimal, the better chance you have for a full 16-game season.
Couldn't agree with you more. All right, Nick, we're talking to Nick Jacobs right now. He's at Jacobs71 on Twitter. Give me one thing we haven't talked about on either side of the ball that worries you right now. What are you concerned about going forward this year?
I would say wide receiver-wise, I want to see some more speed, because if Tyree gets hurt, I don't know who on this team can command the safeties like that. And I know he's got elite speed, but I'm saying somebody that there isn't a massive drop-off there. I really want to see something there. And then at cornerback, like I've talked about on Twitter this week with a lot of people, once you get past Marcus Peters, Steven Nelson in the slot, and then Mitchell at right cornerback, there's a drop-off there right now, and I don't know who on this roster is going to fit that spot if there is an injury to any of those guys.
I already forgot who I asked this to. Somebody who recently had the suggestion that if Mitchell isn't back, that they would move Steven Nelson to the outside, which scares me because then you have to replace Steven Nelson with the worst player in that spot. But either way, there's that option. I'm also curious, do you think that they're going to end up making a move and bringing in a guy that some other team cuts whenever that huge set of cuts happens at the end of the preseason? And I already forgot the other thing I was going to say.
I was going to say,
I'm just excited for Albert Wilson to get 10 targets a game whenever Tyreek Hill gets hurt.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen. If that does happen, hopefully it doesn't. In terms of the cornerback aspect, yeah, I think the Chiefs, for me personally, when I'm looking at it, I think they need to keep an eye on the running back spot. If there's a better number three than West or Spiller, I would at least entertain it in that room when they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel West is better than Spiller right now in terms of explosiveness. I don't know if Spiller's going to hold up all 16 games if they need him to, and that's where my concern is. I think West could. I think receiver-wise, I hope they keep an eye on that waiver wire-wise. Backup offensive line, I think they really need to keep an eye on. If there's another outside pass rusher that it becomes available at outside linebacker, I'd like them to entertain that. And then, like you said, I think corner, I think they got to scour the coach's phone for some depth at corner. Like that corner and O-line and wide receiver, I think from a depth perspective, I would like to see them make additions if they can.
We're talking to Nick Jacobs. He's at Jacobs71 on Twitter. Nick, we'll talk to you again sometime before the season starts and get your outlook for where the Chiefs go throughout these 17 weeks of games that eventually do count. As always, I appreciate the time. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, Josh. Take care, man.
Nick Jacobs at Jacobs71 on Twitter. Listen, the most important thing that you can know here is that he affirmed to me across the board, corners, defensive line. At this point, I think I'm just gonna keep having. I'm gonna keep track of all of the guests we have on, and I do this already. And at home, I have this big whiteboard with like in True Detective. You know how they had those red pieces of yarn connecting these different pictures to other pictures and words and phrases and newspaper clippings. I just pick Chiefs analysts, and then I have lines connecting the pictures of Patrick Mahomes, and then the phrase "defensive line equals good." I have this crazy wall in my house, and so if you ever come on this show and you speak against me, best believe that's gonna be your last appearance.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Me and my housemates were taking like family photos around the dumpster because it was really just very fitting.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM. Put it in your presets. The inactives for tonight's Chiefs game are out already. I'm realizing now how few people are going to hear this on podcast before the game actually happens. Also, after the game, over on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the post-game show will be hosted by yours truly alongside Danny Klinkscale. That is as soon as the game ends over on Sports Radio 810. During the break, not this last break, but the break previous, I took all of the loose change in my backpack and I ran to the vending machine and I bought some peanut M&Ms, which are now almost entirely gone. And whenever I put my 75 cents in and I put in the code, which is 31, by the way, it stuck. And I swear, I realized it stuck. I looked up. I glared at it with, like, I do not have time for this bleep glare. And then it fell right out. I think I scared my peanut M&Ms into falling out of the machine. Anyway, the inactives for tonight are out. And there are a few names here that concern me. I'm not going all the way to being the most alarmist person on the planet, but Cairo Santos still out, Terrence Mitchell still out, Daddy Nicholas out, Parker Anger still out, Shontavious Jones still out, Tom Bahali still out, Justin Houston out, Eric Berry out. Houston and Berry both played last week. That concerns me because those guys were out and then came back and are out again. And that makes me wonder if something happened to either of those two guys in the last week that I wasn't aware of. The guy that's most concerning, though, is Terrence Mitchell. Not that he's the most important. No one on that list is more important. Well, I shouldn't say that, because Eric Berry and Justin Houston both have an argument to be made for how important they are. I'm a little... If I could be guaranteed one of those guys at full health, full strength, I would take Justin Houston. In fact, he's the guy on this team that if I could make him full health and then impervious to injury this year, I might just take him. We forget how good he was because he's been hurt so long. Now, if you told me that I had to take a guy and keep him at his current health, I would take Tyreek Hill probably. I think he's the most irreplaceable person on the offense. Close second to Travis Kelce. Marcus Peters, Eric Berry, Justin Houston all have arguments to be made. But I think the sneaky, like, sixth most important guy on the defense is actually Terrence Mitchell. Because, again, Justin Houston can be an all-pro. Marcus Peters can be an all-pro. Eric Berry can be an all-pro. Chris Jones, I think, can be an all-pro. I would even say that Terrence Mitchell is more important than Derek Johnson right now. On that same level with a guy like Benny Logan. And even then, Benny Logan with Green Nunez Roches and Roy Miller has reasonable replacements. We talked about with Nick a little bit ago. There is not a reasonable replacement for Terrence Mitchell on this team. DJ White made some nice plays. Maybe, and it was Pete Sweeney, I think, by the way, who suggested that that Steven Nelson move from slot to the outside. But if that's the case, how do you feel about that? How does that make you feel? Not good for me. Because I think Steven Nelson has found the place that he is best suited. Maybe if you moved him outside, Phil Gaines could play slot corner. I think that's where he has the best chance, at the very least, to be an NFL corner again. But I'm worried about Terrence Mitchell. Because I really, at this point, I would say that he's probably a mid-level to low-end number two NFL cornerback. And that is very valuable. The gap looks huge because you're talking about, I would argue, one of the three best corners on one side of the field with Marcus Peters. Opposite him, Terrence Mitchell is probably like the 40th best corner, which would make him a pretty high-end number two, honestly. Maybe he's the 40th best corner in football right now. I can live with that, because then I'm not sure you've got 80. Unless you have number 80 on the roster next. Because it's Phil Gaines. I mean, Philip Gaines is the next man up. It's DJ White, a guy who does not seem to be ready yet. So I think there's a pretty good chance that we see the Chiefs end up bringing in a corner that gets released. But I look here at the scratches for tonight. I'm concerned about Cairo Santos not being back yet. I don't know what's going on with Daddy Nicholas. I'm concerned about Parker Inger coming back because he needs to get back into this offensive line so that unit can get used to playing with each other again. I'm afraid that these injuries are going to cost Ontavius Jones a shot at his job. We talked to Nick about the receiver position and how the Chiefs need someone more explosive out there to fill in if Tyreek Hill ends up slipping up. I need to know that now. I need to know that's an option. I need to know that this is a guy who can be on the roster and step in. I'm worried about Tom Bahali never being the same. I'm worried about Justin Houston because every time I've gotten confident about Justin Houston, he has soon after disappeared off the face of the earth with his injuries. Eric Berry, I'm nervous about because he needed to be in this defense. It worries me, man. I know it's the preseason, and I'm sure that a couple of those guys would play if it was the regular season, but not all of them would. And in this third preseason game, none of these guys are playing next week. I would be floored if we see Justin Houston or Eric Berry again, or Terrence Mitchell again, before we see New England. Maybe Terrence Mitchell gets out there to run a little bit if he's back next week. But if those guys could come back now, they would be back for today. That's what concerns me. Someone after the game will rightly ask Andy Reid, say, hey, if this was a regular season game, could Santos have kicked? Could Mitchell have been out there? Could Anger have been out there? Could Holly have been out there? Could Houston have been out there? Could Berry have been out there? And I don't know if you're going to even be able to believe what he says, no matter what it is that he says. But I'm at that point now. This is the first time. This is the first moment. We're all experiencing it live here together. 5:30, the day before the third preseason game, is the first time that I think you can be rightfully worried about the guys whose names show up on the inactives list. I didn't care at all that Cairo Santos wasn't kicking in the first or second preseason game. That did not move the needle for me one bit. Because I don't care if Sam Ficken misses a Ficken extra point. See what I did there? In the preseason. It doesn't bother me. Because of the preseason. I am not nearly so jovial, so flippant about this inactives report. And I do think it brings you to an interesting conversation of who is most valuable, who is underrated right now, who's overrated, whatever. I think that the entire defensive line, the defensive line is going to be fantastic, and I think the depth, do not take the depth for granted, because, man, the difference between a really good top three guys on a defensive line and a really good five- or six-man rotation is huge, because that position is hard to play. That's a difficult thing to do for a living. So you have a rotation of several guys who can step in and do that, give Chris Jones a breather and replace him with Tano Passanio. That offensive line is not getting a break. That poor tackle lined up across from them is not getting a break. He's getting Chris Jones at 100% and then declining, and he's getting Tano Passanio at 100% suddenly after he's been battered around for a couple of drives. That's huge. I love that. But that defensive line's incredible depth makes each of those guys individually a little less vital, which is, again, a good thing. Because that way, if Chris Jones, who, again, is active today, so I feel good about this. Oh, Mac Derrick has an update here, by the way. We'll get to that in just a second. If Chris Jones goes down with an injury, then the season isn't over. Because Tano Passanio gets thrown into the line of fire. So be it. That's okay. That's a better way to live your life than what the Chiefs are doing right now with the receivers. If Tyreek Hill gets hurt, just call it. Because what is this offense going to do without Tyreek Hill as a part of it? Matt Derrick says that Justin Houston has an illness and Berry is getting rest. Both of those are interesting. I hope Justin Houston just has an illness. And as I said at the beginning of this segment, those are the two guys that jumped off the screen to me because those guys played recently. Those guys were out there last week. So them not being out there today is a little surprising. I'm also a little surprised by Eric Berry just like being a guy who needs rest. That's kind of concerning for a guy whose contract is on the books for quite a while still. I don't love that. I am not going to tell you this is because he wasn't at voluntary OTAs. That is not true, and I will not entertain that. Don't ask me. Don't at me. I hope Justin Houston is just sick, and it's a preseason game, so he's not trying to play through it. Fine by me. I'm a little worried about Eric Berry. But Terrence Mitchell's the guy here on this list that now, with that being learned, I think Terrence Mitchell's probably the most underrated guy on this team by way of importance. Have a little bit of show left. 913-491-8255. If you're interested, 913 Tyler Thigpen, Tom Bahali, Dwayne Bowe, D Ford. Whenever we come back, I'll give you a few things to look forward to in tonight's Seahawks Chiefs games. And I don't know. We'll see if something interesting happens during the commercial break. It's Almost Entirely Sports, how it works.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
All right, Blake, we got to hit a break. But thank you for being the first caller of this show of Almost Entirely Sports. You took this show's caller virginity or something.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Perfect. That's weird.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the last segment of Almost Entirely Sports for the week. This is our second full week we went through. Good for us. We did it. Next week is a new adventure. So, Rob Britton, Fast Talking Rob of the program fame, pointed out that Andy Reid said on Wednesday that Eric Berry would be playing in this game. Again, he's apparently out getting rest, which confuses and concerns me. I don't love that at all. He won't play next week, I'm sure, so hopefully he'll be perfectly rested by that point. Another thing, though, to watch for tonight, and this is probably, I would say there are two overarching things I'm really going to, not really overarching, there are two specific things, the opposite of overarching. Let's start the show over. Here we go. There are two things. Oh my God. I just choked on my own tongue. Welcome to the last episode of Almost Entirely Sports. Either because I'm going to get fired or I'll die.
Do you want to restart the segment?
No, I really don't. I really don't. I just want to be able to speak like a human adult. Two things I'm looking for tonight. One, Chris Jones is making his preseason debut. That is now official. He's not inactive. He has not played so far in the preseason. I would be very surprised to see him get the full 2 to 3 quarters of work that the starters are supposed to get. In fact, I would be a little surprised to see the first team actually be out there for 3 full quarters. That was the idea. I do expect, though, to see the starters out there at the beginning of the third quarter because I think they want to sort of emulate making some second-half adjustments, if not really adjustments. At the very least, they want to emulate going back out onto the field for the second half of a football game just to make sure everybody's ready for that, especially all the rookies, just to get a feel for what that's like. So I do think all the starters will play at least at the beginning of the third quarter. Chris Jones being out there is the main guy I'm going to be keeping an eye on. I want to see how he looks. He's been out all of training camp, working on a limited basis, all of the preseason. I want to see Chris Jones, and I want to see him consume another human being. I want to see his jaw unhinged like an anaconda, and I want to watch him swallow an offensive lineman whole. Also, at three Gravy Cats on Twitter just tweeted me and asked, what do Eric Berry and Cinderella have in common? This is a pretty good joke. It's a pretty good pun slash joke. Beard, do you have anything for me? I want you to think about this for a second. Don't find a rim shot. This doesn't deserve a rim shot. This is better than a rim shot. Are you listening to me? Do you have a guess? Do you have an answer? You've been bad today, Beards. You did a good job getting John Price on. That was a mess. But your on-air contributions today have been very weak. What do Eric Berry and Cinderella have in common? Glass heels.
Ha.
It made me laugh. I thought it was funny.
Ha.
Britt tweets in and says, I have no clue why a guy who hasn't played needs rest. I hope Travis Kelce gets some first team reps. TK, it says TK. That can't be right. Tano Passanio is what that is. There we go. I read Travis Kelce gets first team reps. At outside linebacker with Houston out. I agree with that, actually. I would love to see Tano Passanio get more run at outside linebacker. TK does not make any sense, though, for Tano Passanio. This does not phonetically make any sense. So I'm watching for Chris Jones tonight. The other thing I'm watching for is I want to see this offense in context. First preseason game, Alex Smith came out, threw one great pass. That's all I remember. He hit Tyreek Hill a little behind him, but relatively in stride. Go, Alex Smith. Last week, goes out. He drops that ball on Travis Kelce's hands. Nice pickup. All we remember. Today, we're going to get probably a good 5 or 6 drives out of the first team offense, I would think. Rough estimate, but I think that's fair. We're going to see Alex Smith make a nice throw or two. We're also going to see what he does on 3rd and 6. We're going to see what he does on 3rd and 10. That's going to happen. That'll happen tonight, and I'm looking for that. I want to see what happens whenever we get a full half of Alex Smith of this first team offense. Another thing I'm going to be looking for, Pro Football Focus had a tweet out earlier today. Kareem Hunt is making a strong push for playing time with his performance so far this preseason. This preseason, Kareem Hunt has a 141 elusive rating, which is a runner's success beyond the point of being helped by his blockers, which is a very interesting metric. I don't know how they measure it, but I mean, that explains it. Saying, how do we judge a guy, his success, after his blockers are no longer helping him? They call that the elusive rating. He ranks 2nd. Among 29 qualified halfbacks for the preseason this year. I don't know how only 29 halfbacks are qualified. That doesn't seem like enough. It says 2/29. I assume that's what that means. So Kareem Hunt is going to be a guy that I will be keeping an eye on as he continues to make his argument for playing time. And, of course, I do want to see Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to be most interested in Patrick Mahomes in week 4. Because in week 4, I would expect him to get a lot of work. I think he'll probably get the start in week 4. And I think he'll probably, unfortunately, spend most of that time behind the second team offensive line, which I'm not thrilled by. But for the preseason so far, Pro Football Focus, again, they took a look at how all of the rookie quarterbacks drafted through the 1st through 5th rounds have performed this preseason. And Patrick Mahomes has the highest rating of any quarterback among the rookies in this preseason. Because he's touched by an angel. Pat Mahomes has an 84.0 rating. Mitch Trubisky has a 75.6. Deshaun Watson, just a 52.8 among those first-round quarterbacks. This is all minimum 22 dropbacks. Rounds 2 through 5, Nathan Peterman for the Buffalo Bills has an 81.3. He's 2nd among all quarterbacks from this rookie class. Deshaun Kizer comes in 4th, 72.4. At 72.4, and also he has the best chance to start day one among any of these guys. C.J. Beathard and Josh Dobbs have both been playing as well. Josh Dobbs has the worst of these ratings. I remember talking to myself in the Josh Dobbs as like the Chiefs' like third-string guy coming in here, because, again, I think it's crazy that Tyler Bray is going to make over $1 million this year being a third-string quarterback who never sees the field. I would have just drafted a guy like Josh Dobbs later on and put him into that third spot and had him develop. But whatever, he's been bad in the preseason for the Steelers. I didn't even remember that he was on the Steelers. But those are the main things that I'll be looking for tonight. I'm worried about Terrence Mitchell's hamstring, and I've got a little bit of a response on Twitter to that since the last commercial break. Rich says the key to hamstring injuries is rest. He has plenty of time to be 100%. I very, very much hope that's true. Seth Kaiser, we've had on the show several times. Hamstring stuff is tricky. My hope is after a few unfortunate things in the last few years, they're just being uber careful And I hope that also, I hope they're saying, all right, this hamstring injury, this isn't something that needed surgery or that needed some sort of large-scale recovery. This is simply something that needs rest and needs time. I hope that's true, and I also hope that by week one is enough time. I would have expected him to get out here tonight and see some on-field action, even if it's just for something like a quarter. But it will not be the case. No Terrence Mitchell out there tonight, and that does worry me. Also, no Eric Berry, no Justin Houston, but Chris Jones makes his preseason debut tonight, as the starters are expected to go at least through the whole first half. I think we'll see them at least come out at the beginning of the third quarter before the good stuff comes around. Come on, you know what I'm talking about, right? Not really, though. Tonight is going to be our best look at the Chiefs as an actual starting together team that we've seen in this offseason. As soon as the game is over, flip over to 810 WHB, where Danny Klingscale and I will be hosting Chiefs postgame. And we'll be back here on Monday, I'm sure, doing plenty of breakdown. This has been Almost Entirely Sports. Talk to you on Monday. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.